Bob Main, and this is today's Survival Show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. No tinfoil hat thinking on this show, just keeping it rooted in common sense. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 127. And, you know, folks, I got to say thanks for all the downloads and everything. The listener count just continues to rise, and I very much appreciate that. If you're tuning in for the first time, I like to keep this practical, rooted in common sense, as I just mentioned before. It's good to have you. And welcome to all my international listeners as well. A lot of people from outside the United States tuning in. The subject of this show is The Day the Dollar Died. And I'll explain that to you a little bit later in the show, what that means. You're going to hear an audio clip called The Day the Dollar Died from another source, and I'll introduce that when the time comes. I think it's something to think about. If you're into preparedness and you're into survival, this is definitely something that you need to think about. I think it's an excellent survival topic, and that's why I picked it. I got a few things that I want to talk about before that occurs and before I get into that. I would like to take a moment to knock out a couple of announcements real quick. I'm going to keep this real short. I just want to give out the website, todayssurvival.com, the forum. We've got an excellent forum, folks. It's growing every single week. I'm always adding new members to it, and that's good to see. Excellent, friendly people on the forum. Get on there and have a good discussion with us. Click the forum tab at todayssurvival.com. Still got plenty of digital downloads and CDs left from my combination survival and handgun CD. I talk about shooting skills. I also talk about common sense preparedness and how the two go together. And if you're interested in that kind of stuff, $15, it helps support my show. Go click the Buy Now button at todayssurvival.com. It'll help me out. It'll help me keep the bills paid and help me keep things going. And by the way, folks, I just uploaded a new YouTube video talking about the entitlement mentality. It's a little bit about what I'm going to cover in this podcast, but check that out because I put a couple of different little twists in that YouTube video. So just search Today's Survival on YouTube, and I'll put a link to my YouTube channel in the show notes of this episode. Okay? That covers the announcements. I don't like to make this real commercial. All right, let me talk about the entitlement mentality. Let me talk about what I think is going on financially, and I think why we need to be aware of it. I want to talk about entitlement thinking and the problems that it causes. And this is going to kind of set up the audio clip that I want to play. There's a website out there I love to frequent, I love to look at, inflation.us. It's very good. I'm going to play an audio clip for you from their YouTube channel. It's called The Day the Dollar Died. But entitlement thinking. You know, here's some things that I've heard people actually say. I've heard people say this. You ready for this? I studied long hours. I deserve at least a C on that test. I've also heard people say, well, everybody's got one of those. You know, I mean, I should have one of those too. Are you going to get me one of those in the next 24 hours? Okay, that came out of a kid's mouth. Here's another one. Just look at me. Why shouldn't I be with that person? Now, here's one that really surprises me. People say, well, I put in my time, I come to work every day, I do most of what you ask of me, boss, why am I not getting a raise? See, and I think those are examples of entitlement thinking. And I think that type of thinking is wrong. Life is not fair, folks. It's never going to be fair. And a lot of what we get in life is what we are able to make happen for ourselves. And I know that you've heard that a lot, but I just want to reinforce that. And across the spectrum of life in this world, maybe you've heard some of those things. You ever heard people make comments like that? You know, entitlement type comments like that? I just kind of wanted to pose that question out and ask if you've ever heard that coming out of people's mouths before. Okay? I know that there's a lot of us out there that have observed and actually witnessed people who believe that they're deserving or they're entitled to certain privileges just because they exist. Okay? It's not a new phenomenon. in the behavioral science. It's been around for several decades. And in terms of behavior, people actually believe that they should have some material object, things like a new car or latest clothes or a new techie toy, which, hey, folks, I'm guilty of. I love my techie toys, folks. It's an urge I have to resist sometimes. Or they feel like they're entitled to admission at a certain school or a certain club just simply because they exist in this world. And all you have to do is just kind of look around and listen to what people say. Watch their reactions. Their external behavior will tell you a lot. Sometimes they exhibit anger, they get upset, they're whining, they're blaming, they're complaining, and things like that. And it appears that a great deal of suffering in this world is a direct result of people's feelings of entitlement. Okay? They often feel entitled to things over which they have little or no control. And see, that's the problem. That's why they suffer. They suffer because they feel like they deserve, or they have to have, or it should be given to them. Yet they have little or no control over what happens. And, you know, most acts that violate another person, the person that's violating, the violator is causing some type of hurt feelings on the person being violated. And it's because the person being violated thinks, hey, man, I deserve that. You took away what's mine. I think that's bad thinking. And the funny thing is the perpetrator sometimes feels like they're entitled to do bad things to their victim. You know, thieves, rapists, murderers, molesters, bullies, all of them some way feel like they're entitled to violate their victim. And most of those type of people feel like they were victimized too, you know. And so therefore, they're justified in their actions. And on a smaller scale, people feel entitled to make derogatory remarks and belittling others in public or spreading lies or other cruel acts. Sometimes these assumptions of entitlement create distorted concepts of justice, and they say, well, that's just justice. They deserve that. It's not true, folks. That's the problem. And here's some other comments that I want to share with you. And I think these are some profound statements here that I wanted to include on this show. One of them that you hear is people will say things like, well, I'm entitled to claim that because it's mine. I'm claiming it for myself. In a way, that's kind of selfish. And people who have selfish, distorted worldviews are naturally going to think that they're entitled to more. And especially if they've been trained that from a young age. So in my YouTube video that I recently posted, I talk about that. I talk about different generations and what I think the mistake is that we've been teaching young people over the generations. Now, I agree there is some kind of healthiness in asserting your rights, but when your rights turn into selfish entitlement thinking, I think that's where you go wrong. My mom, bless her heart, she instilled in me when I was a kid that you get what you earn. I will admit to you there were times I was lazy. Most of the time I was not. Most of the time I was a hard worker. But there were times where I was lazy. And there were times where I thought things were not fair. Folks, life is not fair. Do you realize that if life was fair, nothing really could exist? I mean, think about the food chain. Is the food chain really fair? You know, if all those animals had to be treated fairly, other animals certainly would not eat. And that would be a problem. And a lot of us wouldn't exist. Humans wouldn't exist if we had to be fair to all the animals out there that make up our food chain. So when I was a kid, because of the way my mom wanted to raise me, I was rarely handed anything. I had to work for a lot of what I got. I did get some really nice gifts, and that's great, and I'm thankful for that, but most of it I had to work for them. And when I look at a lot of other people, a lot of young people today that are in college, they get so much of it handed to them. For not doing much at all. Their parents pay for their education and a new car to drive around campus, a weekly allowance, and you know, some kids' allowance is what a lot of people make, you know, in their job. And so, because of this kind of upbringing, because of this kind of treatment, it's not surprising that a lot of college graduates feel that they're entitled to something when they get out of school. It's because their parents have given them everything. And in a lot of ways, they don't understand the value of money. And they don't understand the necessity of hard work to go out and get certain things. And I think a lot of this is because they're born into a position of affluence, some of them. And so they base their lives on those affluent standards that they were raised with, and they feel like they're entitled to a lot of things that some of the less fortunate people really don't feel that they're entitled to. Some of the less fortunate people feel like they're blessed. And there's an old saying, then the more that you have, the more that you want. I want to talk about the baseline standard for a minute. In psychology, there's something called a baseline standard. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist. Okay, I'm not a psychologist. But this is kind of my layman's view of this and my layman's explanation. The baseline standard is a way that we judge the current situation and what we feel like should be ours. What we feel it should be, we should have that. Okay? It's our entitlement thinking. We think that there's a baseline standard. Okay, here's an example. When you get a raise at work or a new car or a bigger home, for about 6 months afterwards, you've got this great satisfaction. Hey man, I got the raise, and I got more money. I got the new car. I was able to buy a new home. But after about 6 months, then that becomes the norm for you, and that's your new baseline, and that's your new baseline by which you judge your life. And a lot of times, all of a sudden, this desire starts to manifest. I need more. I need more. I need more. And the more you have, the more you start to want. And this is where trouble begins. Okay? And I think this is most definitely true of people who have the most in their life. Their baseline standard of living is so high that it's so difficult for them to get more than what they've already got. And that's the problem. And so they start making a lot of foolish decisions. They start making a lot of foolish decisions with money and so forth. And folks, I don't want to make it sound like I'm lecturing you, because I'm not. This is not a big lecture. I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life. Who am I? Right? I'm just some guy getting on a podcast. I'm just some ordinary Joe getting on a podcast, even though my name is Bob. I'm an ordinary Joe. And I'm just getting on a podcast sharing ideas with you. So think about this as a sharing experience, not just a lecture or a sermon, okay? But let me give you a kind of an example of what I'm talking about. I really believe that entitlement thinking is acquired. It's learned and it's reinforced by our culture here in the United States. And it takes a long time. You know, in the recent YouTube video that I just posted on my YouTube channel, I talk about how it happens over many, many years, many, many decades. Entitlement beliefs over time produces a person who is a member of this newest generation. And, you know, a lot of the people who are my age, I'm 49 years old, a lot of the people in my generation were brought up with this entitlement mentality. And they were brought up that they absolutely deserve things. And folks, we don't deserve much of anything. Okay? We get what we can go out there and we can earn and what we can happen or make happen for ourselves. So at this time, let me go ahead and play that audio clip for you. The one from inflation.us that I want to talk to you about. It's called The Day the Dollar Died. Now, this is about a fictitious event that will happen a couple of years, or excuse me, about a year and a half from now. Well, about a year and three quarters from now. But think about it. Even though this is a video or it's an audio clip of a fictitious event, and I'm going to put a link to this video. You got to see this video. And please check out the website inflation.us and check out inflation.us's YouTube channel. Just put that in the search bar. Inflation.us. They have a lot of excellent videos on that. But again, I don't like to engage in a lot of tin foil hat far out thinking. I don't think this is really all that far out, to be honest with you. So let's see what you think. I'll be back on with a few comments. Okay? Just about 15 seconds here worth of music. Don't go away and listen to this brief clip, and then I'll be back on.
The following is a fictional story of events that may happen in the near future. 8 a.m., New York Stock Exchange. It's a cold, breezy day on Wall Street as markets await the Federal Reserve's announcement for QE4. Futures are up significantly. The Dow Jones just breached its 2008 high of 14,164. Gold just hit an all-time high of 2,900. Silver just breached $100 per ounce. The dollar index is holding at 53. With official unemployment at 16.3%, there is a nervous feeling on Wall Street that if this doesn't work, the world could implode into a depression that will last for the remainder of the decade. 8:19 a.m., Beijing. Chinese officials announced that they can no longer allow Washington to devalue their holdings. After making their concerns private, China accepts that Washington will never stop paying its debts with inflated currency. China makes an official statement from Beijing, quote, "We have made our concerns known privately for some time. With QE4 about to be announced today, China will have no choice but to stop purchasing U.S. treasuries. We have allowed Washington to try to work through their imbalances for 4 years. But with global inflation and U.S. consumers rapidly shrinking as a percentage of global GDP, we feel that a Western recovery is unlikely until they reform their entitlement programs." 8:45 a.m., New York Stock Exchange. Upon hearing the statement from China, Dow futures have a sharp reversal and begin to drop. Gold leaps past $3,000 per ounce, up $150 per ounce in the last 26 minutes. CNBC awaits a statement from the White House. 8:50 a.m., Washington, D.C. The president makes an official statement to calm investors' fears. He tells Americans that he has spoken with several G20 leaders. They have assured him that they will continue to increase their purchase of treasuries and believe that a strong U.S. economy is the only thing that will bring back global prosperity. He has also spoken to Chairman Bernanke, who assures him that a strong dollar will be the result of QE4. The president also reminds Americans that his recent New Deal recovery programs that he passed through executive order will increase the likelihood of a lasting recovery. He also notes that Beijing, since 2009, has slowly been reducing their holdings, so the impact will be minimal. 9:51 a.m., New York. Dow futures fall 850 points in the first 20 minutes of trading. Markets are halted for 1 hour by the authorities. 10 a.m., Main Street, America. The news about the stock market in China has now spread. A panic begins to set in, and unprepared Americans rush to the grocery store. In an attempt to purchase food and water, Americans that didn't know what was going on are alerted by all of the news stories and panic buying. Within 50 minutes, there is a nationwide rush to the stores. Empty store shelves in America become a reality. 10:52 a.m., New York. Markets reopen and the Dow Jones resumes its collapse. Investors around the world join the sell-off in bonds and stocks and begin to purchase commodities. Unlike the panic of 2008, this time commodities are seen as the only safe haven from a dollar crisis. 11:30 a.m., New York. The Dow falls 1,700 points since reopening. Trading is halted for at least 2 hours. The Federal Reserve injects $200 billion into the markets and announces that QE4 will be delayed until further notice. Congress is called back to D.C. for an emergency joint session. Some members of Congress are saying that they consider China's statement a financial attack. 12 p.m., Main Street, America. Several cities begin to see civil unrest after grocery stores are forced to close. Traffic in the streets and violence break out. The president puts the National Guard on alert for a possible deployment onto U.S. streets if things don't get under control soon. Several news agencies are reporting injuries at grocery chains and call for the authorities to do something before it gets worse. 12:15 p.m., Toronto, Canada. George Soros tells CNBC that a run on treasuries is imminent and that there is nothing the government can do to stop it. He says it is unfortunate that a controlled decline of the dollar was not coordinated better over the years. Today really could have been avoided if not for the Tea Party politicians who demanded fiscal responsibility and a constitutional government. 3 p.m. Gold closes at $11.53 for the day at $4,053 per ounce. Silver closes at $173 per ounce. The president announces that due to civil unrest in some areas of the country, U.S. stock markets will remain closed for the rest of the day. With the exception of mining and other inflation-related stocks, the majority of U.S. stocks are down significantly due to the sell-off and flight to safety in commodities. The Federal Reserve announces that it will begin to purchase U.S. treasuries and stocks in order to stabilize the markets. But this only feeds investors' fears of a full-blown treasury run and collapse of the dollar. 6 p.m., Asia. Asian markets begin a massive sell-off. Dollar collapse rumors begin to take hold of the markets. CNBC Asia looks into a possible COMEX default and complete breakdown in the U.S. economy. Gold spikes in Asia, up $1,750 in the first complete hour of trading. Gold is now at $5,803. 7 p.m., gold and silver bullion dealers across the world have suspended all sales due to no inventory. A COMEX default is now expected. Several central bank representatives propose a freeze on currency markets and a fixed devaluation of the U.S. dollar in order to calm investors. 7:30 p.m., the United States. The sun sets on America. In the last 12 hours, the world has changed. Americans are glued to their televisions, taking a crash course on a debauched currency. Smoke from fires in the cities have put a dark cloud over the nation. 7:45, the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve announces it will inject $1.5 trillion into the markets in order to stop any further decline in stocks. 7:55 p.m., OPEC. The final nail in the coffin. OPEC nations halt oil trades in U.S. dollars until further notice. They will only accept euros, renminbi, or gold. 7:59 p.m., the Federal Reserve's announcement to inject $1.5 trillion into the markets causes a sharp reversal in overseas markets. Stocks begin to rally even as Main Street melts down. 8 p.m., Manhattan. Gerard Adams, president of the National Inflation Association, sends out an urgent email alert. In it, he informs members that it is with great sadness that the time to warn and prepare Americans for hyperinflation has ended.
Well, what do you think of that? Pretty alarming, huh? I think there's some good stuff in there for you to think about. I had to kind of listen to that a couple of times, and then I found myself thinking, yeah, you know what? That could happen. So that, you know, if that doesn't give you something to think about and a reason to start preparing, especially financially, but with all your other preps, then I don't know what will. So let's kind of get back to some of the entitlement thinking. I want to kind of finish up here this show. It's going to be a rather short show, a little bit, you know, shorter than what I normally put out there, but that's okay because I've been putting out some long shows lately, and I appreciate you bearing with me on that. So my next point is that the concepts and the ideas of hard work and due diligence and making a strong effort and persevering and delayed gratification, those are not really concepts and ideas that lend themselves very well to entitlement thinking. You know, you hear a lot of people out there, a lot of talking heads and bloviators, including national leaders, saying, hey, guess what? We got to be more personally responsible. We have to take responsibility for ourselves. And that's a lot of nice political rhetoric, okay? But what does it mean? Okay? For me, it means that a person willingly accepts the consequences of their own behavior. And the key word that I just mentioned there is willingly accept the consequences. Willingly. That's the key word right there. Okay? But I have a theory. I don't think this is the majority of the belief in America, and actually the world for that matter. And that's the problem. And so that's how we've created this entitlement mentality. And I think we see this right before our very eyes. I think we see this playing out right now in the year 2011. I think this is what we are looking at. We're looking at how this entitlement mentality is playing out with the deficits and the debt and the trouble that we're into right now and the health care and so on and so forth. And the fact that my generation now, I'm 49 years old, I remind you again, because my generation and my parents' generation, because they're the ones that are now in charge, and they grew up in that world of entitlements And pretty much it began in the 1960s. I go back to the video that I recently put up on YouTube. Back in the 60s with the Gray Society programs is when a lot of this started. It's when they ratcheted it up, okay? I mean, some of these entitlements started long before the 60s, but they really started turning the heat up, turning the flames up, and ratcheting up the spending in the 60s. They're continuing to this very day, folks, and we are paying for what we did 50 years ago. We're paying for the promises that we made to people 50 or 60 years ago. And Americans have, they've grown up with real entitlements. They've grown up with these things. The American perception, the American psyche, is full of an entitlement mentality, and guess what? It's become reality. And, you know, again, I'm not picking on a certain political party here, but I'm going to use the Democratic Party as an example. Now, folks, the Republican Party, the conservatives, look, trust me, lately, they have been just as guilty. So again, I'm not trying to make a political statement here, but let's face the facts. The Democratic Party has represented themselves for decades that they're the party that cares for the little people and the underprivileged and the underrepresented, okay? And that's code for, hey, you've been abandoned and abused by those nasty, rich, self-serving Republicans. Okay? You deserve what they have. And they play the class envy game. And they say, well, we're the party to get it for you. And we're the party that can get you what you deserve, what's you are entitled to. We're going to get it. Okay? And that's the way that they've been billing themselves. Now, again, I'll say Republicans lately, people who are so-called conservatives, have been fostering this mentality. So all of a sudden, we have what we have today. And, you know, let's look at the past 5 to 8 years, for example. There's been this sense, the last 5 to 8 years, there's been this thinking among people that you should have what everyone else has. And it escalated to include home ownership. And promises were made to people that you could have the home of your choice, and it's your right to have that home, and you deserve that home. So people started thinking, hey, you know what, I got to have it. And they got themselves in trouble. They got themselves in trouble with mortgages they couldn't afford. Okay? With entitlement comes expectations. And these people they ended up with unmet expectations. And so now we're left to pick up the mess of what that entitlement mentality, just the home entitlement mentality, has caused. We're left to pick up with that, or pick up that mess. And that's one of the tragedies that I think that we find ourselves in today. Would you agree with me on that? And here's the real shame of it all. A good leader in this country would have seized upon this crisis that we find ourselves in and used it as an educational opportunity and used it as an opportunity to empathize. But unfortunately, it's not been the case. The behaviors that are consistent with people who do not get what they believe they're entitled to, behaviors like blaming and getting angry and stuff like that, these behaviors are now being used by our current government leaders. And, you know, the problem is the numbers of Americans who have fallen prey to this belief system is enormous. Okay, the front page of USA Today so much has so many headlines about this. Okay, recently there was a front page USA Today article that says most Americans are okay with big government, at least for now. And the report said that even though Americans are supportive of what President Obama has done so far, by 55% to 32%, Americans still say that they're worried about big government. And it seems that we're on the trend of nationalization for a lot of things. A lot of things are becoming nationalized. Once the government gets into something, it very seldom backs out of it. Let's remember that. Once the government gets into something, it very seldom backs out of it. So we've got to be very, very careful of what we expect and want our government to do. That's the problem there, is we got too many people. And that's why Ben Franklin said when this new republic in the United States was formed, he questioned whether the people were going to be able to keep that republic. And there's a lot of difficult lessons in life, and these are some things I've struggled with, folks. Failure and disappointment and envy and things like that. But it's part of life. It's part of what we have to get used to. And when you get knocked down, it's what you do when you stand back up, when you try to get back up. That's what counts. And that's what should be taught today. That's what should be taught today. What should be taught to people, especially our young people, is how are you going to get back up when you get knocked down? Not how is the government going to pull you out of your mess. Instead, what happens is a concept called misplaced sympathy. Okay? We like to just rush in there and protect the downtrodden, protect the fallen, and comfort them. And the problem is we start doing that and we get to the point to where they're incapable of doing things for themselves. So they start to become dependent on that. They start to become dependent on people bailing them out. Now, I believe we have an obligation to the next generation. Yes, I do believe that we have an obligation. But I believe that the obligation that we have to the next generation is to teach them how to pull themselves out of the doldrums, not to teach them how the government is going to do it for them. So here's some things, here's some virtues, here's some things that I want to leave you with. 10 things for you to think about. And then I think I'm going to probably start to wrap this up because I promised that this would be kind of a short show. But think about these things. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You can't strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot help the poor man by destroying the rich man. It doesn't work that way. You can't further the brotherhood of man by inciting class hatred. It bothers me. All these people out there that are saying, oh, we want to advance the brotherhood of people and we want to be able to encourage people to get along, yet they're starting to incite class warfare. What's up with that? You can't build character and courage by taking away people's initiative and independence. I think a lot of it comes down to character. I really do. And when you start taking away people's ability to be to initiate great things and to become independent, that's why I'm such a big believer in modern survivalism, because it teaches people to become independent, and it builds good character, and it builds good courage, and it builds good qualities in people. You can't help small men by tearing down big men. And I'm not trying to be sexist here. I'm just using this in context to make a point. This applies to men and women. You can't help the small by tearing down the large. You can't lift the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. See, that's what's so frustrating to me sometimes. We want to tear down the wage payer. We want to tear down the people who are actually providing jobs and paying the salaries, and we think that somehow that's going to make the wage earner stronger. You know, you can't strengthen the employee by weakening the employer. Okay? You can't keep out of trouble by spending more than your income. Now, this applies to you personally. It applies to our government. It applies to anybody. You can't keep yourself out of financial trouble by spending more than your income. You know what? A lot of people think, you know, Bob, guess what? I could be a better survivalist if I just made more money. I could do a better job of being prepared if I just made more money. It's not all about making more money. It's about spending less. You can't establish security on borrowed money, folks. And you can't help people permanently by doing for them what they will not do for themselves. I'll say that last one again. You can't help people permanently by just doing for them, in other words, bailing them out, doing for them something that they won't do for themselves, or they won't take the time to learn to do it for themselves. So find a skill and learn it. Become independent and develop the courage. And again, this show is not meant to be about politics, although I did pick on some politicians. I didn't pick on a certain group of politicians. I didn't really pick on a certain party of politicians. And I didn't call out any politicians by name, because nearly all of them are guilty of creating a dependent society and creating people who feel like the government is going to take care of them. And we know that's not the case. And that's not the mark of a true survival. So, true survivalist, excuse me. So I hope you've enjoyed this message, folks. I wanted to give you some thoughts that I had about this entitlement mentality. It was just something that was on my heart, and I thought it was something that should be communicated to you. And I found that excellent video by inflation.us, and I really encourage you to go to their website and listen to some of the and watch some of the YouTube videos that they've put out, because I think there's some pretty profound stuff there that we all should be aware of. Take it with a grain of salt, but understand that some of that stuff can and probably will happen. So thanks for tuning in to another episode, folks, of today's Survival Show. It's my goal to help you harness the power of choice, making good choices so that you can live independent and strengthen your resolve. I try to keep survival simple, not extreme, and I love to close with what Teddy Roosevelt said: do what you can with what you have, wherever you are. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.